Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening today. It's Nobel Prize Week, and the science awards have been announced. Physiology and medicine on Monday, physics yesterday, and chemistry this morning. Tomorrow comes literature, the Peace Prize on Friday, and on Monday, economics. Right now, I'm joined by Bob Vosatka. He's a science educator at the Liberty Science Center in Jersey City to talk about science prizes and some of the mind-blowing discoveries behind them. And don't forget that later this morning, in just about an hour, we're going to take your nominations for the Nobel Prize for Literature. Some of you heard me mention this earlier in the show. If not, we're inviting you to think about the living writer, and it has to be a living writer, who you think is really, really deserving of perhaps the ultimate honor, the Nobel Prize for Literature. Who is it? And even bring along about a minute or so of his or her work. So if you want to do a reading from this person's novel or poetry or song lyrics or whatever you consider literature, feel free. That'll be a fun thing to do if you're not too busy in the next hour or so. Get together, a minute long reading, and that's really short. I mean, that's, you know, like half a page from a typical novel, or, you know, a minute of poetry, a minute of song lyrics, whatever category of literature your nominee comes from. And we're going to invite you to call up and share a minute of your favorite words of your favorite literary writer who you think is worthy of a Nobel Peace Prize. All right. So we'll do that in about an hour. But for now, it's the science prizes with Bob Vosatka, science educator at the Liberty Science Center. Hey, Bob, welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Good morning, Brian.
And there are some amazing stories in this year's prize winners. I guess the one that's made the news the most, and that's the saddest, is that one of the winners, Ralph Steinman for medicine, died 3 days before the award was announced, which technically put his award in jeopardy, as it's not supposed to be awarded posthumously, but they decided to go ahead.
Yes, that was a great tragedy. Ralph is a person who I know well, because having trained in the New York area, and his work has been highlighted in a number of different ways. He got the Lasker Award recently, but I believe it was about in 2007 he developed pancreatic cancer, and he was one of the very few who survived. The four-year survival is somewhere around 4%. It might be attributed to the fact that he treated himself with this disease, that the cell that he discovered for the Nobel Prize.
Yeah, he used what he discovered about dendritic cells and immunity to extend his own life. That's amazing. So maybe you want to tell everybody a little bit of the science behind that.
Yes, he discovered these cells that are called dendritic cells, and they're fundamental because they're sort of the entryway into the body for all of the things that are constantly attacking us, bacteria, pathogens, and it turns out cancer cells as well. And he was able to identify these as cells that just sort of hang out there, just waiting for things to happen. And when they finally come upon something that is not supposed to be there, not what we call self, they go off on their mission, and they head off and they talk to cells that have been known for a longer amount of time, these lymphocytes called B cells and T cells. And this starts the adaptive immunity, adapting to respond to these foreign cells or foreign invaders.
And he was splitting the award, Steinman, who worked here in New York at Rockefeller University, with two other researchers, Bruce Butler or Butler and Jules Hoffman, and they both had made discoveries about the immune system. Can you explain theirs briefly?
Sure. Theirs is actually a more fundamental type of immunity, one that's been conserved in evolution for going back to very low organisms. So, for example, Jules Hoffman's work was looking at a gene called Toll in fruit flies, and found that these fruit flies were deficient in their ability to fight off infections from bacteria and from yeast. So that was a fundamental understanding that there was some molecule on the surface of cells that could somehow act as a general response to infections. Butler then looked at what we call toll-like receptors. So they're just like these genes that were found in Drosophila, but Butler found them in mice. So we knew that these now were in animals that are more closely related to us, and that these genes are actually found in many different organisms and quite well conserved, suggesting that they really have been fundamental to fighting off immunity. They can somehow distinguish between self and the world around us that is not self, and immediately, what we call innate immunity, immediately begin to respond to these external attacks on our bodies.
And before we go on to the chemistry and physics prizes, Butler and Hoffman's discoveries date to the late 1990s, but Steinman made his breakthrough in 1973, so I guess there's no time limit on Nobel Prizes.
Well, yeah, it's amazing. Steinman's work was quite revolutionary, and over the time, it's stood the test of time. The details of working out how these cells migrate through the body, our ability to identify these cells has evolved over time, and that's what has allowed us to really understand that Steinman's work truly, those observations truly held in the organism and were at what he said they were.
My guest on WNYC is Bob Vasatka, science educator at the Liberty Science Center, as we talk about the lessons to be learned in biochem and physics from the three Nobel Prizes for science awarded this week. Any questions? Listeners, you can call up. Any other scientists want to chime in on the importance of any of the work behind these prizes, or anybody with just a curious question? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Yesterday they announced the award in physics, and that's the mind-blowing one, for the discovery that the universe is expanding more rapidly than we thought because of something called dark matter, though I think we still don't know what dark matter is.
Yes, actually it's dark energy is the focus of this thing.
Ah, okay.
One way to think of it is we believe that our universe started with something that's been referred to as a Big Bang, and things had started to flow away from each other over what are now 13 billion years. And it was believed that, you know, since there's this stuff called gravity, which pulls things together, that eventually all these things would start to slow down, and so they get pulled back together again. It was rather surprising that these workers were able to find that this was not the case. It's sort of like trying to throw a baseball up into the air and presuming that it would just come down, and then find that what ends up happening is it just keeps on going away from you faster and faster and faster. That's how revolutionary this observation was.
The three U.S.-born scientists, Saul Perlmutter and Brian Schmidt of the Supernova Cosmology Project and Adam Reese of the Hi-Z Supernova Search Team, made their discoveries in 1998, and the press release for the award said their discovery was a complete surprise to them.
Yes, that's right. They had expected to find that gravity was going to be pulling things back together again, that this was an extension of the work of Edwin Hubble, that the universe was expanding, but because of gravity, things would eventually settle down. It's also comes from the basic work of Albert Einstein about what is the nature of gravity itself. So this is quite surprising that things appear to be getting pushed further and further apart, faster and faster.
I guess it's always good to know that your universe is expanding rather than contracting, even if we're talking about, what, trillions of light years away. But Ken in Stamford has a question about this. Hi, Ken.
Hi. Yeah, I've wondered about that. I thought, well, until last week, I guess, with the puzzle about the velocity of light that was faster than they thought. I thought that the ultimate limit of speed in the universe is the speed of light. And if the universe is constantly accelerating in its expansion, what happens when it gets close to or past the speed of light? Can it or can it not?
That's an excellent question, and I think the reader is referring to a totally different discovery that was announced in the last week, and that is one that is very new, and to the best of my knowledge, it has not been reproduced, but it suggests that there were certain objects in nature, the neutrino, that can go actually faster than the speed of light. The observations that these researchers that just won the Nobel Prize, Perlmutter, Schmidt, and Reese, they did not find things that are going faster than the speed of light. they are getting closer and closer to the speed limit of in the universe, that is the speed of light. But these objects, these stars that are very far away, do not go faster than the speed of light. They just get closer and closer to it.
By the way, how far is the furthest edge of the universe now, or do they even have an estimate?
I know it only in terms of time, and that is, we can look back to something like close to 13 billion years ago, where it's about 13.5 billion years ago when we believe this Big Bang occurred. So we're looking very, very far back in time, and you know, Einstein has told us that both time and space are in some ways related to each other. So. Both of them give it same information.
All right. So we've done the bio prize. That covers the 10th grade science class. We've done the physics prize. That's 12th grade. We don't want to leave out 11th grade science, and that's chemistry, which went to Daniel Shechtman today for his discovery of quasicrystals. What are they?
Quasicrystals are materials made of atoms that have an unusual formation of the atoms. That is, that the atoms in three-dimensional space don't follow the rules that were expected. The rules that were expected is that things should line up as either around a center where there's what we call two-fold symmetry, where two things are related to each other, or four-fold symmetry, where you look around and you see four things around you, and ultimately six-fold symmetry. And if you write these out on a piece of paper, they make very, very simple patterns in space. When you get to something like five-fold symmetry, everything gets very, very confused very, very quickly. And it was believed that nature just didn't use this model to make to arrange atoms because it seemed to be very complex. Shechtman made an observation that others had made before, but he persisted. And he persisted in believing that this was a real phenomenon, and he ultimately tracked it down, persisted. He was actually rejected by a number of people along the way. So his persistence really paid off, that this really was a fact of nature.
Cliff in Westchester, you're on WNYC on the Science Prizes. Hi.
Hi. My question is directed to the Nobel Prize for the dendritic cells. And I was extremely intrigued by the fact that one of the Nobel laureates actually was treating himself. What, if any, applicability does this process have now for the patient, for that AIDS sufferers or myself? I have recurrent toxoplasmosis. I know some of these infections have not been treatable, mm-hmm. By common knowledge at this point. And does dendritic cells, does it have some optimism for that, and can you join studies to get the treatment?
Cliff, thank you. And you know what? To see if we can get an answer to that from a caller, David in Westchester is calling to say that he worked with Ralph Steinman. David, thank you so much.
Sure. My pleasure.
And what did you call to say?
So I worked with Dr. Steinman a number of years ago. And I think before I say anything, I really am tremendously indebted to him. He really taught me how to be a scientist. And that was after I went off to have a career in academia and then in biotech. And I really benefited tremendously from his influence in learning how to do science. But the thing I really called about was that from the time that Dr. Steinman made his initial observations to the time that they were accepted, it took years. Mm-hmm. He was denigrated. He had trouble getting published. New discoveries are not always readily accepted by the
scientific
community.
It's so often the case, isn't it, that people have to blast their way into acceptability when so-called conventional wisdom thinks that they're wrong. And so to the other caller's point, has the work on dendritic cells already been fully integrated into medicine? And so if there are treatments available, his doctors already know about them?
Well, you never know what hasn't been discovered yet, but certainly the dendritic cell has been accepted, and its ability to do what it does better than any other cell, which is the so-called present antigen.
And David, we have to leave it there because the segment is just about over. 10 seconds for a last word to Cliff in Westchester or anything. Bob Vysotka?
Yes, well, there are some treatments that have been used with the dendritic cells, but it's very complex. because it requires making a vaccine that comes from each individual.
Bob Vasaka from the Liberty Science Center, thanks a lot for talking about the Nobel Prizes for Science today.
Thank you very much.